On March 2, 2014, about 1,200 people from all over the United States gathered together in Washington, D.C., forming a formidable mass of environmental justice and indigenous rights activists. With large cardboard signs reading, "Stop the Pipeline" and "People Over Pipelines," the activists marched from Georgetown University to the White House in a loud and proud manner. When they arrived at the White House, hundreds of protesters dressed in white jumpsuits, covered in black ink, shackled themselves to a White House fence and lay on an obsidian-colored tarp next to the fence. This powerful scene of bodies submerged or drowning in oil symbolized the activists' fight against the Keystone XL pipeline. But you may be wondering, what is the Keystone XL pipeline, and why was it important enough to rally thousands of people against it? Well, continue listening to find out more. My name is Ishika Kotari, and I'm the host of the Pipeline Podcast. Through this series, I will be discussing the impact of oil pipelines, specifically the Keystone and Dakota Access pipelines, on Indigenous communities in the United States, as well as the environment. Even though this issue may often be overlooked, the harm that these pipelines cause requires our immediate action. I will explain why, but to do so, it is crucial to start at the beginning. So during this episode, I will provide the necessary historical background and context, connecting these pipelines to the United States' larger settler colonial history. Keystone XL is a transcontinental oil pipeline that rapidly transports tar sands oil from the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin in Alberta, Canada, to refineries in Illinois and Texas. The current pipeline also passes through North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri. TC Energy Corporation, the energy infrastructure company in charge of developing Keystone, began the pipeline's construction around 2008, which is when protests against it started too. In 2010, Keystone became operational, even though construction continued to extend it to Texas. Since 2016, with the completion of Phase 3 of construction, the Keystone Pipeline has delivered approximately 700,000 barrels of tar sands oil per day to the Texas refineries. Transporting this much oil must have not been enough for TC Energy Corporation, as they proposed an extension, also known as Phase 4, to deliver 830,000 barrels of tar sands oil per day by creating a shortcut from Alberta to Steel City, Nebraska. The oil is harvested in the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, one of the largest reserves of petroleum and natural gas, with almost all of the world's tar sands oil. The American Geoscience Institute, a nonprofit that represents earth scientists, reports that tar sands, also known as oil sands, are a mixture of mostly sand, clay, water, and a thick molasses-like substance called bitumen. Bitumen is made of hydrocarbons, the same molecules in liquid oil, and is used to produce gasoline and other petroleum products. This oil passes through and nearby indigenous lands, such as those of First Nations in Canada, Pawnee, Ponca, Fort Belknap Indian Community, specifically the Assiniboine, also known as the Nakota peoples, and Gros Ventre, also known as the Ahani tribes, and the Osheti Sakowin, that includes the Lakota, Dakota, and the Nakota peoples. Additionally, the Native American Rights Fund, a nonprofit organization that uses existing laws and treaties to ensure that U.S. state governments and the U.S. federal government live up to their legal obligations, explains that the pipeline's proposed route crosses through traditional Lakota homelands and treaty territories, and will affect not only the Rosebud Sioux tribe, also known as the Sichangu Lakota Oyate, but also Native nations in Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska. It also endangers the Ogallala Aquifer, which supplies water to Native and non-Native users and agricultural needs on the High Plains in 8 states. Even though this podcast mainly focuses on the Keystone Pipeline, I will also briefly discuss the Dakota Access Pipeline, which transports crude oil from the oil source, the Bakken Formation in Northwest North Dakota, to an oil terminal near Patoka, Illinois, since 2017, and is owned by Energy Transfer. In crossing North Dakota, South Dakota, Illinois, and Iowa, the pipeline impacts and passes through the lands of Standing Rock Sioux Nation, Ocheti Sakowin, that includes the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota peoples, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, and Muscogee Nation in Iowa. Therefore, this pipeline also gave rise to large protests with pan-Indigenous support. Dr. Andrew Curley in Beyond Environmentalism, a hashtag non-DAPL is assertion of tribal sovereignty, describes in his paper, in 2016, the people of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe mobilized to prevent the Dakota Access Pipeline from crossing through their unseceded territories and threatening the Missouri River alongside the tribe's eastern boundary. This became the hashtag NoDAPL movement that galvanized hundreds of thousands. Fighting for tribal sovereignty, which entails the indigenous right to self-determination and their right to ancestral lands, indigenous lives, clean water, their environment, and sacred grounds, Indigenous communities and activists have spent years working to shut down these pipelines. Continue listening to ultimately find out the Biden administration's response and the current state of the Keystone and Dakota Access Pipelines. I will be using settler colonialism as a framework to study the experiences of Indigenous communities in the United States. And this framework focuses on colonists and U.S. Americans' deliberate extermination of Indigenous communities in order to occupy their land and seize their resources. Settler colonialism, which is inherently a genocidal policy, defines United States history, but the prevailing consensus national narrative tells a different and less truthful story. This origin narrative, found in many textbooks and elementary and high school classrooms, driven by the Columbus myth and doctrine of discovery, suggests that European nations acquired title to the lands they discovered, and the indigenous inhabitants lost their natural right to the land after Europeans arrived and claimed it, as Dr. Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz explains in her book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. I highly recommend this book, by the way. To acquire indigenous land, Euro-Americans waged war against Native American communities, aiming to wipe them out through predominantly their inhumanity and partly the fatal diseases they carried, forced them to sign treaties that U.S. Americans most likely reneged on in the future, pushed them into reservations often under military control, and tried to assimilate indigenous children through brutal boarding school systems. A crucial part of the settler colonialism framework is also highlighting indigenous agency, survivance, and resistance against colonialism, which can be seen through the powerful hashtag NoDAPL movement and protests against the Keystone Pipeline. This brief history lesson does not do justice to the distinct stories and experiences of indigenous individuals and groups. Native American cultures and histories are not a monolith, and believing so would be a settler colonial mindset. To learn more about the pipelines within the United States' long history of land grabs, I had the honor of speaking to Ms. Winia Locke, a Lakota activist fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline.
My name is Winia. I'm on the South Dakota side of Standing Rock. Our reservation is the only reservation to lie on North Dakota and South Dakota. And Dakota Access Pipeline, which was forcibly and illegally built and constructed and currently illegally operating under the Missouri River, endangering 10 million people's drinking water. And I've been in opposition since it was publicly announced that it was going to be constructed in 2016.
Discussing U.S. Americans' unjust extraction and exploitation of indigenous natural resources, she explains.
All of our natural resources have been stolen mm-hmm. for the past 500 years. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that just really aggravates me. They're like, you know, why is reservations and indigenous treaty areas so disenfranchised? Why are they so, they're still in poverty? Why is, and I'm like, it's systemic oppression mm-hmm. and you guys stole all our resources. Yeah. That's the reality mm-hmm. of it. It's systemic oppression He stole all of our resources. You guys literally took all the gold from our land. You took all the silver. You took all the wood. You created these uranium bores, especially in the Black Hills, and left those uranium bores open to seep into continuously. Those bores are still open in the Black Hills to this day that have never been sealed to continue to poison the people that are residing on that land now.
Settler colonialism is not a thing of the past, as it still continues today in combination with capitalism, which allows for government-supported corporate exploitation and seizing of indigenous land and natural resources. In fact, Dr. Dunbar Ortiz states, in the early 21st century, free market fundamentalists, economists, and politicians identified the communally owned indigenous reservation lands as an asset to be exploited. And under the guise of helping to end indigenous poverty on those reservations, call for doing away with them a new extermination and termination initiative. With TC Energy, energy transfer, breaking treaty obligations, denying tribal sovereignty by encroaching on indigenous land, creating conditions that put indigenous health and livelihoods at risk, as U.S. Americans have done throughout history, oil pipelines are an example of this modern settler colonialism. Thank you so much for listening. In the next episode, we will connect the settler colonialism framework we defined to the Keystone and Dakota Access pipelines. In discussing their impact and history more specifically, we will hear from the firsthand accounts of indigenous activists fighting the pipelines and finally find out what is happening with the pipelines in 2021. Until the next time, bye.